Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to Little Atoms. This recording is the first in a series of live events called Two Cultures, where we bring together a scientist and a poet to explore a particular aspect of science. Back in September, we invited poet Simon Barraclough and Professor of Physics Lucy Green to look at how we understand our sun at Waterstones Piccadilly in London.
My name's Lucy Green and I'm here representing the science side of Two Cultures. My background is in astrophysics and I work at London University in a space science laboratory, which is the most thrilling title, I think, for me to be able to say that I'm a space scientist. And my focus for the last 20 years has been trying to understand the sun. And what I want to do this evening is kind of take you on a bit of the journey that I've been on, where the sun has gone for me from being this very dull, uneventful object into something that actually is a lot more interesting and a lot more dynamic.
Thank you, Lucy. Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming in from the sun, and it's a bake-off night as well, so it's even more extraordinary to see you here. My background is in being a poet and in being fascinated by astronomy since I was a very little boy. And I have worked with Lucy and in the past, and I was writing residence at the Space Science Laboratory where Lucy works, and got scientists from all kinds of different backgrounds, not just astrophysics, but also physics to write some poetry. And I spent the last kind of 3 or 4 years obsessed with the sun. I don't quite know how it happened, but this weird switch went in my head and I became obsessed with the sun. I started writing poems about it obsessively and produced a book all about the sun called Sunspot. And we also turned it into a one-man show with songs and performances, and you'll be seeing little, strange little snippets from the show. Obviously, this is a very different environment for it, so bear with me as I do that. And so we're going to kind of alternate little presentations as we go through. We're going to start with one of the songs I produced for the show called About the Journey of Photons from the Centre of the Sun to Your Eyeballs. So let's go for that, shall we? anchor my star soul. For I am the servant of this living God, and daily serve her. For at the first glance of the glory of God in the east, I worship in my way. For this is done by fixing espresso, and watching the pinkening lights on the shard. For then she waves her warmth across the scene, and lifts the hearts of those who took a night bus at 4 a.m. to clean HQs. For she tickles the orbitals of foxes in their stride, and hies them home. For having risen and settled into her groove, she begins to consider herself. For this she performs in 11 degrees. For first, she does the plank to strengthen core stability. For secondly, she runs a malware scan for comets closing in. For thirdly, she completes the paperwork for eclipses, total, annular, and partial. For fourthly, flares. For fifthly, she sorts her sunspots into pairs. For sixthly, she gives neutrinos priority boarding. For seventhly, she referees the arm wrestling match between the upstart fusion and gravity. For eighthly, she weaves flux ropes and picks up skipping games. For ninthly, she degausses her plasma screens. For tenthly, she is profligate with her photons. For eleventhly, star jump. For having considered herself, she will consider her neighbours. For she runs a cloth around the ecliptic to make it gleam. For she oils the wheels of any planet gliding there. For she sends invites out to wallflowers in the autumn clouds. For she issues shadows for children to dodge as they make their way to school. For she shakes out her blankets for devotees of helioseismology. For when she takes her prey, she plays with it to give it a chance. And one planet in nine escapes by her dalliance. For in her morning orisons, she loves the earth and the earth loves her. For she is of the tribe of tiger, tiger. For she hands out colouring books to chameleons in the morning. For when it is time to rise, she blushes to be seen at so intimate an hour. For when it is time to set, she is crimson ashamed to run out on us. For though she neither rises nor sets, she thinks it best that we believe so. So that we can take our rest and fuel our waking with anticipation. For she lifts oceans over mountains without thinking. For she tries to solve the puzzle of the weather, placing this here and that there, and attempts to even out the air. For she is a mixture of gravity and wagon. For she's a stickler for solstices. For she booms like a woofer for those that can hear. For she cares not what lives, as long as all live. For she takes her time. For she lends us the light from distant stars to swirl it into our sockets. For sometimes in the winter haze, she's as pale as a lemon drop and lets us watch her bathe unpunished. For she never calls it sick. For her colours are open source. For every raindrop's an excuse for Mardi Gras. For she will work on her drafts for a million years and release them typo-free. For she will lash out and then regret the hurt. For she promises radio hand jam. For your power grid is a cobweb she walks into when she steps off her porch. For she kept mum through the maunder minimum, but her behaviour is definitely on the spectrum. For she keeps dark about dark matter, but she definitely knows something. For she plays Miss Prism in the importance of being firmest. For she offers board and lodging to Turner's angel in the sun. For she confused the wounded parts of a broken heart. And release the lost mass as hope. For she spins plates to create auroras. For she leaves clues all over the place. Some cryptic, some quick, some general knowledge based. For she is hands off. For she tends to micromanage. For she lays down squares of light for your pets to sleep in. For she turns a blind eye to all the creeping, swooping pillars of the night that leaves a moon-faced nightlight on. For her sunquakes flatten no buildings, gridlock no cities, disgorge no refugees, for she is not too proud to dry your sins. For she gives us heliopause and time to rethink disastrous decisions. For Ray-Bans, for she polarizes opinion. For her secrets are waiting to free us. For she appreciates Stonehenge and visits every day. For she sets herself by the grid of Manhattan. For she will kill you with the loving of you. For she can shine.
nice and it's so invigorating to hear Simon's perspective on our son and find somebody who has such a passion for the object that I also have an enormous passion for. And I think it's interesting to view ourselves as, you know, the latest in a long line of people who've been absolutely mesmerised by the sun and have wondered what it is and who it is. I love the personification of the sun that you give. Because the sun has inspired civilizations for thousands of years, even longer. And it's interesting to me to think about how early ideas evolved to think about what the sun actually is, which is, you know, the central part of solar physics. So what is the sun? How do we explain it? And so when we look back at early civilizations, you'll find that every single one has their god associated to fire and light, associated with the sun. And perhaps for everybody here this evening, if you were to think about words that would describe the sun, you might think of flame, fire, heat. I know when I go into schools, I ask children to tell me the words that they that come to their minds. If I show them pictures like this of the sun, that's exactly what they say. Incidentally, this is one of my favourite pictures. This was taken from the top of Mauna Kea on a visit that I was very lucky to make last year. So this is the sun setting. And we drove up to this mountain, 14,000 feet above sea level, got there to watch this, you know, spectacle, daily spectacle for the astronomers up here. And I thought we would be there by ourselves having this peaceful moment, but you might be able to see like the crowds that have gathered on the top of this mountain where there's a very thin atmosphere and people are suffering from altitude sickness. But we made that journey because we wanted to see the sun from this very special and stunning place. So people have always ascribed power to the sun and they've tried to understand it. And as a scientist, I think it's our role to test those ideas about fire. But how is the sun functioning? How does it shine? And I find it very interesting that when we try and grapple with this very big question, we draw initially on the things that we're very familiar with. But the challenge as a scientist is to not be constrained by that and try and be open-minded to the things that we don't yet know. In the first movie that we saw of Simon's poems, the Photon movie, I love that one. I love the line, "Photon, get a move on." So maybe you could just say, before I go on to talk about that a bit, but what you were thinking when you were writing that?
Oh, right, yeah. Well, I didn't know until a few years ago when I started reading about the sun a bit more that you know, these photons that leave the surface of the sun and travel, obviously, and inevitably and unavoidably at the speed of light, that's what they're born to do. They get created in the sun's core, but because the sun is so massive, they spend hundreds of thousands of years colliding with other particles, exchanging, I think, levels of energy, and so the light that gets to the surface of the sun and it hits us within 8 minutes may have taken, I think, anything to 100,000 years or a million years to just to get out of this packed, dense ball of matter. And I just thought that was kind of mind-blowing because we think of light as being so instantaneous and so fresh and unimaginably fast. But then when you put light into the context of the universe, which is 13.9 billion years old and how vast it is, of course light is grindingly slow, really. You know, there are things we still can't see because the light hasn't reached us yet. And it was that that kind of interesting contrast is the kind of thing that really gets both writers kind of excited. It's also love poem as well, so it's kind of, I was impatient with someone at the time and I thought, how can I bury all this stuff in solar science? So kind of what I was doing.
That interpretation was hidden on me. All I saw was love for photons. So when we think about what the sun actually is, I mean, it is a spherical ball of glowing gas. So at its heart, it is a very simple object. And that really brings us to the title of this event that we called Something So Simple as a Star. And the person who spoke those words, or wrote those words, was this chap, Arthur Eddington. And he was one of Britain's most successful mathematicians and astrophysicists. So he lived between 1882 and 1944. And he was working a lot on trying to understand what makes stars shine. So we knew Well, they knew at the time that stars, because our sun is just a star, is a spherical ball of gas, and he was trying to work out what was going on inside. And in 1926, he wrote one of the most influential books that we've ever had in astrophysics, called The Internal Constitution of Stars. So the area that Simon was just talking about, where the light is created and takes these huge timescales to escape before it even gets to the surface, and then it takes 8 minutes to get to our eyes. And his book was hugely influential, and he ends it by saying that he hopes that we're not too far off from understanding something so simple as a star. And I just think those words are lovely, because on the face value, the sun does seem like a really simple object. But one of the things that fascinates me is, as a scientist, how long it's taken us to even come to that conclusion, and how twisted and full of turns that journey has been. So if I was to say to you some words, you might, if you're not a scientist, you might remember them from school physics. So to understand the sun, we had to have almost 300 years of scientific studies from the early telescopes in the 1600s, learning about electricity, magnetism, light, atomic physics, gravity, forces, all of these things come together in our scientific studies of the sun. And it's been a really, really long journey. So how far have we come in understanding something so simple as a star? Well, I would say that around the time Arthur Eddington lived, we knew some basics about how the energy was being created. We knew the size of the sun. We knew the composition of the sun, that it's mostly made of hydrogen. That was a discovery made by a British female scientist, Cecilia Payne Gaposchkin. No one ever talks about her, but she discovered what really the entire universe is made of, because most of it is hydrogen. And so we had the sort of the foundations in space. But it's kind of sad to me that the era that followed Arthur Eddington, well, that he didn't get to see it. And by this I mean the space era. So this is the one that we live in, and this is the one that really gets me excited. So when we developed the ability to go into space, we got above the Earth's atmosphere, and we saw the sun truly for the first time, fully, without the obscuration of the Earth's atmosphere.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Blocking some of the light, causing it to scintillate. And so I've got three pictures here that for me mark the journey that we've been on in space science. Any rocket buffs out there might recognise the picture on the left-hand side. That is a V2 rocket that was left over after the Second World War. When the war was ending, the rockets and the German rocket scientists surrendered to America, and they started using the rockets, on the face of it, to do research looking at the sun and the Earth's upper atmosphere. But also they were learning about the German rocket technology at the same time. So the first rocket went up and studied the sun. The middle picture shows a technology that I also find quite intriguing. This is called a rockoon, so a hybrid of a rocket and a balloon. And so they decided that they wanted to be able to launch rockets at a moment's notice to study the sun when it got active. And they couldn't just leave rockets on the launch pad because that tied up the launch pad for perhaps days or weeks at a time. So they decided, right, what we'll do is we'll launch the rocket on a balloon and that will just drift. And then whenever the sun produces this burst of activity that we want to study, we'll fire the rocket up through the balloon, solving the problem of what to do with the balloon at the same time, and then the rockets will carry up the instruments to make the studies of the sun, which I think is ingenious. We don't do this anymore, but I'm a big fan of rockets. And then on the right-hand side, we've got a picture of the first orbiting space station, which is called Skylab. And this is a space station that was dedicated to understanding how humans would function in space, but also it had on board a really sophisticated solar observatory. And astronauts were trained as solar physicists before they went to this space station, so they could operate the telescopes for people like myself. And this was orbiting in the 1970s. So after the Apollo era ended, NASA had its sights on the sun, and it used the third stage of a Saturn V rocket and turned it into this orbiting space station, which I just think is wonderful. And in fact, it deorbited and came down over Western Australia. So if you're ever in Western Australia, drive to a town called Esperance and you can go and see this space station now in this tiny, tiny museum. It's absolutely phenomenal. I made a pilgrimage there a few years ago. So I flew for a day to Perth, I drove 3 days to Esperance, and I found the space station. Yeah.
What year was it? Was it 76?
I think it came down.
Deorbited, one of my favourite verbs.
Maybe 79.
End of the 70s. I remember I was a little boy living in Huddersfield and I was hoping or praying that Skylab would land on Huddersfield. And it seems such a waste to land in a little state of unpopulated area.
Well, it's an interesting point. So in the museum, you go in and it's this corrugated iron museum. Lots of buildings in Australia have corrugated iron. And there are other displays. So one is a bull ant collection that someone's given to the museum. One is a barbed wire collection. And then you've got Skylab. It's not given any more prominence than any other exhibit in there. But it's such a significant mission. So now we have the space age looking at the sun. We can view it in all wavelengths of light that we want to. So the image I showed before is just a visible light, how our eyes detect the sun. But the beauty of going into space means we can see the sun in ultraviolet light and x-rays. And I wanted to just show you, before I hand back to Simon, how the sun looked yesterday, taken using wavelengths of light that our eyes can't detect. So these images come from a mission called the Solar Dynamics Observatory. Everyone can get these images, they're all freely available because it's a publicly funded mission, so therefore the public can get hold of this data. And they show the sun at the same time, just taken in different wavelengths of light, going from longer wavelengths on the left to shorter wavelengths on the right. And what I hope is apparent is that the sun looks different when you look at it in different wavelengths of light. So you see the surface where the sun looks like a very smooth ball, and then you come up actually into the atmosphere and you see all this structure. And this is actually all created by magnetic fields. So everything you're seeing there, the shapes in the gas, are all created by magnetic fields. So magnetism is one of the key things that we need to understand to know why the sun looks as it does. So these are images from yesterday. And you can get even more up-to-date images if you have a look. Go ahead and see them.
They used to live in awe of me, the Godhead, the fulcrum of perfection, the prime mover, the chief creator who could ripen grapes as an afterthought, bringing culture and savour and civilization. Now, I'm just the boy, the marker that indicates the exit from the harbour, something to be got past, something of a feather in one's cap, to be brought under one's belt. pocketed, regarded perhaps as a useful pointer, a fond memento. The universe hurts, but you knew that. I pity you, your brief lives. Over in the squint of an eye, it's a problem. But then overblink it. Some stars are shy, the distant ones, the clingy, binary ones, the dense ones who try to swallow their own tails of light, but like the mass, didn't get the right starting. Forward. Feel. Let you in on a little secret. Hell is just an oven preheating for something really wicked coming this way. Turn around for your shadow. What do you see? Four legs, two legs, three. How limpingly beautiful you can be. Ever want to be a star? It's a simple lesson. Most households have the ingredients. Everyone has a shelf full of dead cells, an old bag of gravity trapped at the back of the factory. You just don't have enough of what it takes. Is Jupiter a failed star or an overachieving planet? You decide. Put your spin on it. The stars are the yes-men of the universe, no negative capability. 4 billion years of saying yes and 5 billion years of yes is yet to come. I wish I could use up this core. Begin to mumble, maybe, for a trillion years or more. I pity you, your brief lives. Are you planning for the nebula? Things you leave behind. Your inventory, memento mori. The universe hurts, but you knew that. I'm starting to repeat myself. That was a pulsar. Who steadfast keeps me? I spent 1 million years making one perfect photon to send to the Spanish steps. That dawn they carried me down. A star will never let you down. But a planet will break your heart. I envy you.
Some other stars. It is just a star, just a simple star. How special is it? We heard about the planets there. Jupiter is potentially a failed star. This schematic shows the size of the Sun on the right hand side. Jupiter, you can just about make out, is the largest planet on the left, and then all the other planets, well, you can barely see them, they're so small. You could fit over 1 million Earths inside our Sun. It is a huge object. It dominates our solar system in light and mass and gravity. So how does it compare to the other stars that we see out there? And actually today you may have heard in the news that the Gaia space mission, which has been mapping stars in our own galaxy, has released its first data. It's measured information about 1 billion stars in our own galaxy. That's 1,000 million stars, and it's a huge number, ridiculous number. It's still only a small fraction of the total number of stars in our galaxy, but there are a lot out there, so how does our Sun compare? Well, this animation guides us through our Sun compared to some other stars. And I'm going upwards in size, as you can see. So we have Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky. You can see that when the sun sets. Up to Arcturus, red star, Aldebaran, so these are red giants, getting much, much larger in size now. Rigel, that's in the constellation of Orion, getting even bigger, Antares, and Betelgeuse. And so when you start to look at other stars, our Sun can potentially be dwarfed, but I don't want you to go away thinking that our Sun is not special. It is still special, but it just sort of sits in the middle range, really. The smallest stars we see in the universe may be about 10% of the mass of our Sun. The largest star, or the most massive star we've ever discovered, That was a discovery made by a team at Sheffield University. They found a star that's 260 times as massive as our sun, so massive that when it dies, it will blow itself apart, leaving nothing behind. So our sun sort of sits in the middle of this spectrum. It's not particularly small, it's not particularly massive. I mentioned it has a magnetic field, but then all other stars have magnetic fields too. So what does it do for us? Well, there are sort of two things I want to say about our sun. And the first is that it actually acts as a protector for us. So the sun's atmosphere doesn't end where the images seem to indicate. It simply thins as you go up in height. And it actually stretches out over all the planets, and it reaches out for over 18 billion kilometres from the Earth. The edge of the sun has only just been discovered by the Voyager 1 spacecraft that was launched in 1977 and has been travelling out through the solar system ever since. And we sit in that atmosphere. We are living in the sun's atmosphere. And I've got a little artist animation to show you of the galaxy. So you see the spiral arms and the bright centre. And then when I run it, we'll zoom in. And we'll zoom into one of the spiral arms where we are. And as we get closer and closer, you'll see the point of light that is our sun. And then what you'll start to see is this sort of windsock that illustrates the extent of the sun's atmosphere. And we are hidden within that. The sun is moving through the galaxy, which is why it's drawn out like a windsock. It's compressed on one side and stretched out on the other, so the direction of motion is going up. We are embedded in that atmosphere. And it's really important for us because the sun's atmosphere acts as a shield and it blocks very high energy particles that are called cosmic rays. They come from the centre of the galaxy, and if we were to encounter them, they could damage our skin, damage the cells in our body. So this huge inflated atmosphere of the sun acts as a shield to protect us from these very high energy particles. And that was really amazing for me when I found out. I never thought about our sun as a protector. I thought about it as a giver of life and a provider of energy, but not as a protector for us. And then I think the second thought that I want to communicate is the sun is a majestic object. And I very much see it this way. It's enormous, it's powerful, we rely on it, but it has these amazing forms of solar activity. These are the kind of things that the raccoon was trying to capture. So I want to show you one animation now. This is an image of the sun in ultraviolet light. Again, everything that you see here is shaped by the presence of magnetic fields. The gas that you're seeing has a temperature of around 2 million degrees, 2 million Kelvin. Incredibly hot. The centre of the sun is 15 million degrees, even hotter. But what I want to do is zoom in to one part of that image and show you a video that's been heavily processed in a way that will bring out changes in the sun's atmosphere. So where there's nothing happening, you'll see grey, and where there are changes, you'll see colour and brightness. And let's see what happens. So if I run the video, so this is real data from the sun sped up. You see this huge eruption that takes place, and this portion of the sun's atmosphere suddenly expands. Material flies up at thousands of kilometres a second. Some of the material is so heavy it falls down under gravity and impacts back onto the surface of the sun. And these are the kind of things that we see on the sun all the time. It's incredibly beautiful. Perhaps I should say that before I trained as a scientist, I wanted to be an artist, so I did a year of art. And I think these kind of images still tickle that side of me, but I'm to have satisfied. The aesthetics of the sun are incredible, and the science is also incredible too. So the sun is our protector, but actually these kind of events are the biggest explosions that we see happening in the solar system. And they themselves can cause some problems for us, but we have a sort of love-hate, perhaps, relationship with the sun. It protects us on the one hand, but if these kind of explosions reach out towards the Earth, we also need to be a little bit careful.
Very handy for me that you mentioned art and your original training as an artist, because in the book of Sunspots, there's, as I do my research, I I became obsessed with looking at how painters are treated the sun. And painting is all about light and form on canvas. Turner famously was obsessed with light. It's probably apocryphal, but I like to think it's true. His final words on his deathbed were, "The sun is God." And there's a kind of imaginative, strange theology in the book as well. But I wrote a sequence of poems about the sun talking about its favourite painters and telling little fibs about them all. I think I wrote five or six. I'm going to do some of them now. You'll spot the painters. It's not very cryptic. I can disguise them. Vincent was my favorite, despite his weakness for starry nights, those mirrors of wheat, the gnawing gristle of existential, well, you know what I mean, that soggy stuff in the middle of you. Remember my tussle with the wind to get the traveller to the Rufus coast, and the wind smote and stupidly smote, and I wooed with waves of oozy heat. I was much the same as this. Remove the vestiges, hack through sinew, scimitar the ear, cinch, and then send the iron through the heart, inch by superheated inch. Actually, I'm push. I have to say that Nero was my friend. His gaze never left that inner sunset. His watch never let me off the hook. That look towards that thing I've heard you talk about. That thing that waits. That red, 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 red thing that fades. I watched him paint the happiness of loving my brunette with a twinge of regret. I saw his tapestry trashed among 3,000 souls. He made art worth destroying, I guess. That approach, I'd have to say that Surat was my fault. Divining the prism through divisions, proportionally visible, particle by particle, a little dotty, perhaps. Pointedly finishing that damn hat. I like to spend Sunday in a park with George, making my entrance again. With my usual flair, sure of myself. Dogs and monkeys and parasols, let's go and get drunk on light again. It consoles. By the way, how's my cold getting on? I've set as much aside for you as I could. Don't use it all up at once. Should come in handy. And how's my oil fairy? It does best in the dark, under the ground. Doesn't do so well in the light. Don't let it spoil. I assume you're using solar, right? But all the stuff's from the back. In case there's a rainy day for me, in space. Speaking of which, one day you'll sail away on a fair wind of photons. Remember,
hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.